Our state has a backlog of bills that's billions of dollars from the last budget impasse. Today, Governor J.B. Pritzker gets his first chance to make good on his inauguration promise to present a balanced budget. Today on the 21st, we're live from the rotunda of the state capitol in Springfield. In the hour before the budget address, we'll speak with Comptroller Susana Mendoza about that backlog and Republican and Democratic leaders, including Jim Durkin and Kimberly Lightford. Attorney General Kwame Raoul also joins us.
The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WNIJ in DeKalb, and WCBU in Peoria.
That's all coming up on this special hour of the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and as you can hear this morning, we're broadcasting live from the state capitol in Springfield. We are in the South Hall of the Rotunda. In about an hour, just upstairs from here, Governor J.B. Pritzker will be delivering his first budget address. Stay tuned for that. We'll be providing special coverage throughout the state with NPR Illinois' Brian Mackey here with me in Springfield, Dave McKinney from WBEZ in Chicago. The last time we were in this building, last year at this time, a different governor gave a budget address, and this time we have a Democratic governor presenting his budget to a Democratic General Assembly. Later on the hour, we're going to hear from lawmakers from both parties, Democratic State Senator Kimberly Lightford, Minority Leader Republican Jim Durkin will be joining us. Right now, though, let's just start with some analysis with Ken Chris, who's a public finance professor at the University of Illinois Springfield. Ken, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for having you here with me.
Thanks for having me.
Ken, this is a huge budget address in terms of what is at stake here. And I think there's lots of numbers. People might hear about this $8 billion bill backlog. They hear about the billions of dollars that we owe in pension. I wonder if you can just outline for us what you see is at stake here.
Well, I think it's probably too much to say everything's at stake, but to a certain extent, everything is at stake. Budgets are fundamentally statements of values and priorities. And so, you know, this is the first look we have at what are going to be the real values and the real priorities of the new administration.
And so when you say values and priorities, it really comes down to spending and revenue. So what are you hoping to hear from Governor Pritzker today?
Well, in general, when we look at budgets, what we want to see are a few things. Number one, we want to see realism. We want to see realistic forecasts of revenue and spending. We want to see an honest treatment of the liabilities that the state has. So not only the bill backlog, but just the overall debt position that the state has. We also want to see a budget that is free of gimmicks. So transferring from different funds and asset sales, which may or may not happen. The last three budgets, for example, carried a plan to sell the Thompson Center that never really materialized. So what I would like to see is a more realistic look at the financial position of the state and a look at what we really can accomplish given all of the constraints that we have to face.
That's UIS public finance professor Ken Chris with us. He's going to be with us throughout the hour, giving us some more analysis and background. Of course, one piece of this, or so many pieces to this, as we've been talking about, one of the biggest ones is that we have an $8 billion backlog of bills. Susana Mendoza is in charge of paying those bills for the state of Illinois. She's held this office since 2016. You may know that she's also running for mayor of Chicago, but today we're going to be talking to her about our state's finances. Comptroller Mendoza, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, excited to be here.
So let's look at this $8 billion number. As of yesterday morning,
8.1 to be exact. 8.1. I've got to follow every dollar.
And so I wonder if we can start just first of all with that bill backlog. How much of that you are hoping gets paid down over the next fiscal year?
So unfortunately, from what I can tell so far with the budget that is being presented, which I'm very happy, by the way, let's just start with saying that it's exciting to have in the governor's first term, or not just first term, but the first year, right, a budget that is being presented that looks pretty good, to be honest with you.
So have you had a chance to see
it yet? So I have a pretty good idea of what is in it. So from what I've seen so far, it actually looks pretty good. It looks like they put a lot of effort in trying to put together a budget that does not rely overly on things like selling the Thompson Center. I know the professor just made mention to that. That has been consistently in the budget for years. So has things like working together with others for like $7 billion. I mean, that's not at all realistic, right? So some of the pension buyouts that we heard of last year to try to balance the budget clearly were pension buyout projections that were not going to get realized, right? So those are all things I talked about last year. So far, this looks promising. But to get to that $8.1 billion, what doesn't look promising is that there is no plan, from what I can tell right now, to address a single dollar of that bill backlog. So my office is going to have to continue if no action is taken. Unlike last year, where I did have a $6 billion authorization to go to the market with bonds, which we turned into $9 billion, and that's how we managed to pay down the bill backlog by half. The only way that we can do that is if we have additional revenues included in the budget, and in this budget, we do not appear to have that. So, look, the reality is that $8.1 billion will take time to pay down. We're going to continue to manage it, to triage it. And it's unfortunate for those businesses who have entered into contracts with the state of Illinois who have been turned into unwilling lenders. We're doing the best we can every day to continue to triage those payments to folks because we want to make sure that doors don't close and lights stay on.
So just to be clear, when you're talking about what's in the budget, are you hoping that there will be sufficient revenues to actually have revenues in the budget to be paying off these bills as opposed to going to the bond market? You're shaking your head no.
Yeah, there won't be because, you know, our debt transparency report that just came out yesterday, right? So just starts off the budget with a $1.5 billion hole. So it's going to be...
So there's a $1.5 billion gap from this current fiscal year.
That's right. From last fiscal year, we ended up... So this last fiscal year, we ended up $1.5 billion in the hole starting this new budget. So this governor has inherited a pretty significant fiscal disaster. It's not going to be solved overnight. It's going to take years to get through it. And unfortunately, he starts with a significant handicap of when you start your budget planning, you start with a $1.5 billion negative deficit. So there's a lot of things that have to happen before I'm going to start to see any revenues that will help us pay down that bill backlog. So that's above and beyond whatever this budget is going to be talking about.
What is the best case scenario of what you're hoping the governor says today?
That his projections are realistic in terms of what he... I think that having a conservative and realistic budget is just having an honest dialogue with taxpayers in Illinois. We need to know truly how significant those challenges are and put forth realistic ways to balance out the budget. I was so happy to see that the Thompson Center is not included as a realistic projection because essentially that's like magic beans and pixie dust, right?
But do you feel that have we had a governor in recent memory of either party who's been honest with taxpayers about what are the situation we're in?
No, we haven't. And from either party.
Correct.
But, you know, I always feel like there's optimism and I believe that this could be that budget, and I'd like to believe, you know, whether the governor was a Democrat or Republican doesn't matter. We should be honest with the public as to what our finances are. And I'm happy to say that he's able to even craft this budget in large part because we were able to do things with bipartisan support. Democrats and Republicans joined me in passing the Debt Transparency Act. And now we're literally working off of numbers that are current as of last month versus what used to be the case, almost a year old numbers. They were essentially useless. So we're making significant strides here on trying to identify how bad our fiscal condition really is. And even if it's bad, it's okay as long as we acknowledge what those numbers are, because you can't really fix the state's finances if we pretend that there's something when they're in fact something very different.
And so all of this pretending has led to, for example, $950 million in late interest penalties alone last year.
It was actually $1.104 billion in late payment interest penalties.
And so what are we looking at for this year?
So we've cut those down significantly. Once we had a budget, we were able to start paying down some of those late payment interest penalties as we are required to do by law. I've been able to hold them back as much as possible because the good news is for taxpayers that we do not pay interest on interest. So, but there is a legal stipulation that those dollars do have to be paid at some point. But we still have, you know, like $500 million worth of late payment interest penalties to contend with. And those are the worst kind of dollars to have to pay because, frankly, it's stupid debt. Like, we should never have incurred it. We were paying 12% interest on bills over 90 days, or I should say, you know, 1% a month. But because we didn't have a budget for 736 days, you're talking about 2 years worth of late payment interest penalties that added up to over $1 billion of wasted taxpayer dollars. So we'll get around to paying those. But the good news is that this year the budget has to include those late payment interest penalties in the budget, which in the past were never we were never transparent about. So we've, like I said, we've put some transparency laws in place that require more honest budgets. At the same time, it ties the governor's hands a little bit because before they could fudge the numbers, this year, this budget, just even by law, has to be more honest. Plus, I think that Governor Pritzker understands the severity of the need to be honest with the public right now.
Comptroller Susana Mendoza, one last question. I think lots of folks throughout the state know you're running for mayor of Chicago. What's your plan for this office should you be elected?
We have, look, I haven't skipped a beat here. I have the most amazing people, but I'm also on top of it. I love to say that strong women can multitask. And I also, it's kind of nice to have a governor who is not taking step after step or ignoring the markets or telling people to ignore the markets. That in and of itself makes this job a little tinsy bit less stressful. But on top of it, we're moving forward as if, you know, I'm still going to be the controller. And we have a blueprint in place for what we want the next 4 years to look like in terms of innovating with a new payroll and accounting system that 'll make things run more efficiently and transparently as well. And we've got a really great legislative package that we're doing. We want to bring significant transparency to the MCO program, which there's very little to none on. And when I hear from vendors, for example, after we pay billions out each month to the managed care organizations that they still have not received their payments, like, I want to know why that's happening. Okay, where's all this money going and how is it being distributed by the MCOs? So we're moving forward with our legislative package, and you know, I think Illinoisans should feel very comfortable that if there's one office that knows what it's doing, it's the controller's office and the controller who's at the helm of that office. Thank you.
That's Susana Mendoza, who is saying hello to our next guest who's here.
Yes.
Thank you for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Jim Durkin is sitting down next to her. Representative Durkin is the House Minority Leader. He represents Illinois' 82nd District, which includes parts of the western suburbs of Burridge, Western Springs,
Willowbrook.
We will get
which
and
has been very popular lately, and for not good reasons though.
And we'll get
I'm a little hard of hearing, so
yeah, we'll grab some headphones for you.
Thank you.
Can I just start by asking you first of all how you're feeling today? So I wonder if I could just start by asking you how you're feeling on this budget address morning about what Governor Pritzker will be presenting about bipartisan cooperation.
Look, I've stand by the whole concept of bipartisan cooperation, and I stress that at our swearing-in ceremony, and I've said this over and over again. Last week, there was a bill that was rushed through that I was, unfortunately, there was no
bipartisan. The minimum wage bill.
The minimum wage bill. And I hope it's just a hiccup. That's not going to be the way that the rest of the session is going to be. And I'm going to take the governor at his word that the problems that we are currently facing need to be solved on a bipartisan basis. And now this morning, there was a briefing for legislative leaders with the governor over the governor's budget proposal. It was a cordial meeting. I hope we can do more of these. It was just more of an overview of what he thinks we need to do to get to a balanced budget. So there are a few things in here that I think that I'll raise, but I will just say this, and to be consistent, under Governor Rauner, I've always said that a budget is a wish list. It's a wish and a desire for the administration of how we should.
It's kind of a blueprint for negotiation, right?
Exactly. So, and the operative word is negotiations. So.
So let's talk about the things that already. Let's talk about the things that are already on there for you in terms of what you are most concerned about when it comes to negotiation.
First and foremost is the we're not addressing what I believe is the biggest problem in state finances is our public pension systems and our five systems. I am a firm believer that we need to reform the systems internally, and I've also stressed that we should take another shot at the courts with the Cullerton model, which deals with consideration. And sadly, that was kind of dismissed at the meeting today. The Democrats' majority and also the Speaker, the President, and the Governor are of this belief that we need to reamortize our pension payments, meaning that we're going to stretch it out. But this year, there's going to be a $800 million.
Ken is shaking his head, and Ken does not like that. Here.
I don't
we
like
have
it
a public
either.
Finance professor.
No, it's terrible. And this is exactly the what we're seeing. What the proposal is that we're going to be presented with today is exactly what put us in this problem 15, 20 years ago under prior administrations. And to me, that is a failure. And that is a non-starter with myself and also my caucus. And also, there's discussion about bonding out and doing a pension obligation bond of $2 billion. Again, this doesn't get to the root problem that we have with our systems. We have to be able
How do you think we can get to the root problem? Because certainly when lawmakers, when you all have tried to do something, the Supreme Court has also overturned things. So you've had a hard time dealing with the constitutionality of pension reform as well.
When we passed that bill years ago, it was, it was a fairly draconian bill, and which we did it under the belief that it was a 50-50 proposition with the courts. The courts made their statement. I have, over the past 2 years, have subscribed to Senator Cullerton's proposal that we can move forward with this consideration model. And I believe, based on my reading of that case in the Illinois Supreme Court, that the door was open for us to be able to make certain changes for future on future benefits. And to me, and as we discussed today, John Cullerton's bill, if it was passed, there would be $1 billion savings. And I suggested that why don't we move as quick as we did on a minimum wage and get that and see if we let it get tested by the courts. But there doesn't seem to be an appetite from the Democrats in the House and the Senate or the administration to address the biggest problem we have in state finances, which is our public pension systems.
Representative Jim Durkin is the House Minority Leader. We have to take a break. I don't know if you can stick around. If you can for a minute or two, that
sure.
would be great.
Stay
tuned. You're listening to the 21st, our special broadcast live from the state capitol in Springfield. We are about 45 minutes out from the governor's budget address. First, we're broadcasting live from the state capitol. As you can hear, it's busy here in the corridor. We're just off the rotunda where lots of folks are gathering. In a few minutes, they'll be heading upstairs to hear Governor Pritzker deliver his first budget address. Right now, I'm speaking with Republican Jim Durkin. He's a representative for Illinois' 82nd district, parts of Chicago's western suburbs. We're not going to name all of them. There's a lot of them. Representative Durkin, I wonder if you can share with me a little bit more. You were saying that you were in conference with leadership about this budget. So there's a couple things that we've heard Governor Pritzker talk about, legalization of marijuana, video gambling, sports gambling. What are you thinking about that in terms
sure.
of as a source of revenue? How are you and your Republican colleagues feeling about that?
Well, you know what? For sports wagering is basically opening up and having a sports book. Last year, the United States Supreme Court opened up the sports book to the rest of the states. And so... the governor's office has estimated that in this fiscal year, that if we pass a bill that will move it forward, that we could, based on the licenses that would be awarded, some 20 licenses, that we would be able to gather $212 million off of that. Recreational marijuana, I think they're talking $170 million for this fiscal year on that.
And do you feel like that's realistic? That's something you would support?
Personally, I'm not supportive of recreational cannabis. It took me a long time to get my arms around medical marijuana, and it's still in the pilot program stage. I have societal concerns with it and saying that this is going to be a way for us to be able to solve our budget issues. I'm not convinced what's going on in the West Coast is really going to be good for Illinois. But with that being said, I have members in my caucus who feel differently, and our members will vote their district on it. If this is a 60-vote threshold, my prediction is that it will pass the House of Representatives. Sports wagering, this is now a question of us being able to compete for market share. And this is something that Governor Rauner and I discussed last year. He was open to expanding gaming specifically for the sports book in Illinois. So I would suggest, and I would support that. And I think that the boogeyman about gambling expansion, we ought to just move on, because every state around us is just
Think we're losing
cannibalizing
out
all
neighbors.
Of our
Let me ask you one final question then, which is, we've certainly heard Governor Pritzker talk a lot on the campaign trail about changing our income tax and having a progressive income tax. That would require a constitutional amendment. Your thoughts on that?
I disagree with it. I've looked at other states that have similar characteristics of Illinois, and we've seen that the rates that would have been imposed upon families in those states, it's been very, very disturbing, because the middle class is the one that ends up making most of the payments. And I just can't believe that it's just going to be a handful of, as Governor Pritzker said, it's the Bruce Rauners, Ken Griffins, and J.B. Pritzker should be paying more. It's going to be more of the middle class as we know it right now. Our caucus is unified against that, and that will not change. It requires 71 votes. The Democrats have 74 votes in the House. If they have 71, knock themselves out, as far as I'm concerned. But we will not be providing votes on that matter, and that is something that we feel very strong about.
When we look at the budget impasse and how that was resolved by leadership within this state house. I wonder how you're feeling about leadership and members and folks working with the governor's office this time around. Do you feel like this year the lines of communication are open? It seems like there are some things where you feel like there's a negotiation that's already started.
Yes, I believe the attitude is different. And as I said last week, I hope that's a hiccup of what happened. But I've had multiple conversations and meetings with the governor since he's been elected, and I appreciate the fact that he's reached out to me and is going to talk more with members about his priorities and how we can incorporate our thoughts into that process. So this is going to be we'll take it on a weekly basis. But I do believe that the governor has the best intentions in mind. But the question of his intentions, I'm not sure if they reflect our caucus. But you know what? That's what this process is all about. As long as he accepts and recognizes what our priorities are, we'll be in a better place moving forward and perhaps having a bipartisan solution on the budget.
That's Representative Jim Durkin. I want to let you go. I know you've got a head upstairs.
I do, but you know, the gentleman's coming out. I just want to thank him as Attorney General
Raul. Attorney General Kwame Raul is sitting right next to you.
We have an issue with a Sterigenics issue in my district, and I want to thank him and also the administration for their seal order last week recognizing the environmental problems, and he's been very, very upfront and very, I would just say he's done a great job so far, and I'm very happy with his leadership.
Appreciate that.
And Kwame Raul is here, as well as Representative Durkin just introduced him, our state attorney general. We've been talking about the budget. I want to just shift gears a little bit and ask about some things that our new attorney general has been dealing with. But let me just start by asking, is it strange to be here and not be a legislator?
Yes, it's strange to walk in this building and not have an office. But so I'm a visitor when I walk in the building, because our office is across the street, but I'm kept busy at the Attorney General's office.
There's not
a boring day.
I know we are here to talk about the budget, but we asked you to come on because of some national news. And in particular, you joined a lawsuit that California is filed this week against the Trump administration's national emergency declaration to fund border fencing along the U.S.-Mexico border. Why did Illinois join this lawsuit?
Well, it's apropos we talk about this when we're talking about the budget and how much the state of Illinois is going
to be spending
on services within Illinois. We and the other states that joined in the lawsuit are impacted by this decision, because funds that would otherwise come to the state of Illinois for drug interdiction or for investment in our military facilities here in the state of Illinois would be diverted by this so-called emergency, which, you know, words that come from the president's mouth are inconsistent with the characterization of this as an emergency. He said it's something that he didn't need to do. He said in a conversation a couple of years ago that this is something that was political. It's not important, but it was largely political. These are words coming out of the president's mouth, and data that comes from his agencies do not support the notion that this is an emergency.
And do you think that Illinois taxpayers are aware of perhaps the financial ramifications for people in Illinois when the president in Washington makes a declaration such as what he's done?
Not necessarily, but when you think about the different military bases and underinvest, if there's underinvestment in them, there's a financial impact on the surrounding areas. And with regards to investment in drug interdiction, our law enforcement needs that investment to do the work of making sure we deter trafficking of drugs within our state.
I wanted to ask you about a couple of other things. Since we last spoke before the election, there have been even more stories of sexual abuse by clergy within the Catholic Church. Our listeners may remember that your predecessor, Lisa Madigan, launched an investigation into the church last year. Is that continuing in your office now?
That investigation will continue. I can't say much more about that, but I'm committed to make sure that our office steps up to protect children wherever they are, and particular the places we'd expect them to be the safest.
And I know you can't, I'm sure there's lots of parts of this you cannot discuss because it is an ongoing investigation, but I wonder how it feels to continue to see stories about this that continue to come out about abuse.
Well, it's disturbing to hear about abuse of anybody, but particularly abuse of children in places that you expect them to be the safest, you know, in places of worship, in schools. So it's important for us to step up to make sure we do everything that we can to investigate all of the allegations and where appropriate to prosecute.
I wanted to also ask you about an incident that happened here, unfortunately, in Illinois on Friday, and that's a gunman that shot and killed five people in Aurora. On Monday, the Illinois State Police acknowledged that the shooter shouldn't have had a gun in the first place. He actually had a felony charge of aggravated assault. ISP actually did send him a letter saying that he needed to surrender his weapon to local police. It doesn't appear that that happened. I wonder if what role you feel the Attorney General's office has in preventing mistakes like this one from happening.
Well, we've got to work on policy, and we got to work in conjunction with the legislature and with ISP to fill the gaps where they exist. As a legislator, I passed a bill that called for FOID card verification, meaning that when there was a private transfer of guns, that you would have to call or check.
Which is, this was a problem with the with his FOID card.
Correct. Well, he shouldn't have had a FOID card to begin with. And so it wasn't so much of a verification issue as the fact that the background check was insufficient. So there may be need for expiration of fingerprinting because fingerprinting would
do you feel like we need to have a policy solution to this? Because I think often when we talk about gun control, we talk about creating new laws. But I wonder what happens when we have existing laws and if they're not followed properly, how we can account for that.
Well, there's both. There's a question about when I think there were some 10,000 odd FOID card revocations, and I don't know the full data on the retrieval of the FOID cards or retrieval of the weapons from the individuals or reports of how they disposed of their weapons. I think the data that's going to be coming forth is not going to tell a great story about that. But certainly with regards to the background check itself, a fingerprinting would have revealed that there was a problem with this individual, and he would not have been able to get a FOID card. So there's both. And, you know, there are those who will argue that, well, we have enough laws and they need to be enforced. But where the laws fall short, we need to adjust them to make sure that these mistakes don't happen.
Former state senator, now our attorney general for Illinois, Kwame Raoul. Lots going on in your office. I appreciate you taking the time to come down and talk to us on this budget day about all of the other things that your office is doing. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And I want to turn now to, we've got, everybody's making friends here at the table or already friends. State Senator Kimberly Lightford also just sat down with us, a Democrat from Illinois' 4th Senate District, parts of Chicago's West Side and Western Suburbs. She's also the Senate Majority Leader. Senator Lightford, welcome back to the 21st.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Before we get to the budget, I want to ask you about minimum wage. We just had Representative Durkin here discussing his thoughts on it. He said he wasn't happy with the speed and the way in which this was passed. This is a law that Governor Pritzker signed yesterday.
Yes.
It will double the minimum wage to almost double it to $15 an hour by 2025. You've sponsored this bill many times before. How did it feel for you to have this accomplished so quickly?
It is one of those surreal feelings because it's something that we've been trying to do to help low-wage workers for many years. The last 25 cents that they received an increase was the sunset back in 2010. So it's been 9 years since we've sponsored minimum wage bills. I actually passed 4 bills out of the Senate over the years, so it wasn't a quick thing to me. It wasn't something that the Dome wasn't familiar with. It wasn't an issue that we didn't know about. We actually went to referendum about 4 years ago.
So you don't feel this was rushed?
It wasn't rushed. I've been in communications with all parties negotiating. I believe that no matter what you do, there will just be some opposition to a minimum wage increase, and that's well expected. They were part of negotiations. They offered up suggestions. I took on as many as I could. I believe that it was a really balanced result that we came up with. It didn't give the opponents and the advocates everything that they wanted, the proponents and the advocates everything that they wanted.
So you feel like this was a compromise?
It was definitely a compromise bill.
I'm speaking with Senator Kimberly Lightford. We are broadcasting from the state capitol. As you can hear the buzz around us, lots of folks are about to head upstairs for Governor Pritzker to deliver his budget address. When it comes to that, what do you want to hear from Governor Pritzker today?
So I'm really eager to hear from the governor. One of the incidents that you just spoke with our attorney general about, and that's just violence and mental health tied to it. A lot of times we ignore the concern for mental health and not really making sure that we accommodate that population. And then we're also allowing them at the same time to be FOIA card holders. So I believe there is some area around trying to address violence prevention and supporting more mental health. I'd love to hear his efforts in making sure that our school funding formula that we just passed 2 years ago now, that's been implemented one full year, additional funding for schools so we can meet our target there. Early childhood ed is really important as well. I know that's a passion that he and I share, so I'm hoping that there is some additional supports there. But I'm also really concerned about revenue. Like, how do we dig ourselves out of this
hole? Right, because you've talked a lot about things that we need to spend money on, but
yeah,
where is the money going to come from?
Absolutely. But those are still things that government are required to do. We still have a $34 billion budget. It's not like we don't have any money. It's prioritizing the needs of the community. And if you have heavy violence and you have $34 billion that you're working from, you need to put money in mental health and areas of need. But to generate additional revenue so that we can begin to grow the economy, I know he has a $1.1 billion idea revenue stream package that I'm eager to hear about, to learn more from. I know that he's addressed issues around fixing our pension system. I'm really concerned about the pension system. We've tried it. We created a ramp years ago. We created a tier two system years ago. And I think it's really important that we refine that, reform our pension system to get us in a good footing.
So there's a lot going on here.
As
you are thinking about all of these priorities, as you are about to head into that chamber, I wonder what you feel like the mood is like here in the Capitol compared to previous years. So I'm thinking just of the past 2 years or the past few years of the Rauner administration.
Well, I believe we're hopeful. We had no idea for the last 3 years. No information was shared with us, any idea on what to expect so that we can have engagement conversations.
And you feel like you're having those meetings now. I know Representative Durkin was saying he was in a meeting this morning where you guys are starting to see the plans earlier.
Yes, it's the process that was always around the Dome prior to the administration. We're beginning to communicate with one another. We're beginning to talk across the aisle. We're beginning to have leadership, have conversations that always existed. We just hit a wall for the past 4 years. So hopefully we can turn those conversations and communications into something positive. I know that many people have huge expectations. I want people to know that there's no way anything could be fixed in the first year. It's going to take time. We have a big hole. We have big debts. You know,
lots
things
to fill.
Lots to do.
We have to take a break. I know you have to head upstairs. I want to thank you for taking time to speak with us. Senator Kimberly Lightfoot, Senate Majority Leader, a Democrat representing Illinois' 4th District. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
to a special edition of The 21st. We're coming to you live from the state capitol in Springfield. It's getting a little quieter now in the halls of the capitol as lots of folks are heading upstairs to their seats in the General Assembly. In about 20 minutes from now, Governor Pritzker will be delivering his first budget address. We will be bringing you that live as well, so stay tuned at noon for that. Right now, in these few minutes leading up to the budget address, we've got some analysis. We've been talking all of this hour to lawmakers, so we've heard everyone from state officers like our controller, Susana Mendoza, our attorney general, Kwame Raoul, but we've also been talking to politicians, including Representative Durkin, Senator Lightford, about what they want. And so now we've got two folks here to give us some analysis and unpack everything that's been said, give you a clue of what to look out for in the budget address. Ken Chris has been with us all this hour. He's a professor at University of Illinois Springfield's Department of Public Administration, where he's an expert in public finance. Brian Mackey is our IPR expert in public finance. He's making a face. He doesn't like that title. He's our State House reporter. Both of them here with me. Guys, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
That's the line I use at the kids' soccer field.
I am an expert in public finance. All right. Yeah, Ken, let's start with you. Let me just start with what we heard Susana Mendoza say at the beginning of the hour, talking about the bill backlog. Why is it important how we handle that? So we're looking at $8.1 billion, and that's just bills that we owe.
Right. Right. So let me start by saying this, is that it's good that we finally have transparency in that. And that's something I think we can credit Comptroller Mendoza for, is making that more public, so that that was always hidden and behind the scenes. And so transparency is good. But I think you mentioned the important word in what you said is how we handle it. So part of how it was handled before was to borrow more over the long term.
And I asked her about that. I asked if there were plans to do that this time.
Yeah, and with all due respect, that's just like if you have big credit card debt and you get a loan through Prosper or Lending Club or go to your local bank and get a loan, the debt's still there. It's just being paid off.
You're just borrowing something else.
You're just borrowing something else. So it's not new money. And one of my concerns, being somewhat new here, is that I feel like everybody, after the bill backlog was cut in half or whatever it was, is everybody sighed a big sigh of relief.
It's still $8 billion.
It's still $8 billion, and it's still money we owe, regardless of whether it's owed on a credit card or to a lending club type of thing. And so I think we want to be careful in looking at, we have to generate new revenues or make cuts in existing programs in order to really address the financial shortfalls that exist in the state.
Brian Mackey, I wonder how much we will hear any of that today. I wonder how much of this, what we've heard from Governor Pritzker already, has been frankly about lowering expectations of what he can do in his first year.
Yeah, we've certainly heard them trying to paint as gloomy a picture as possible. We've heard
Is it accurate?
Yes, it's a gloomy picture.
It is, yes.
And we've heard him putting a lot of blame for that on the previous administration. The big sort of pre-budget report they came out with had the words Rauner wreckage in the title, referring to the last governor. But of course,
Ken, would you agree with that?
You know, the problems that have exist right now have been developing over the last 20 to 30 years. I would say Senator Durkin, I think it was, said is that there's kind of a pox on all houses. The blame is probably equally distributed across party.
Yeah, there have been a lot of bad decisions over the decades. It certainly did get a lot worse in the last 4 years. Whether Governor Rauner deserves the blame for that, or the Democrats who at one point held supermajorities in the legislature deserve the blame for that, people can make up their own minds about that. But there is plenty of blame to go around.
And so I wonder if we can just get realistic here in these last couple of minutes, talking about, first of all, what we're facing in terms of the size of the deficit, and then we can also get to the problem of pensions as well. Representative Durkin was talking about some of that, and I know, Ken, you wanted to unpack some of that as well. But I wonder if we can just start with just what we're facing.
Okay. In terms of the deficit, one of the important things, again, is how you consider certain things. So Governor Rauner's last budget, I was just looking at that last night, actually was projected to have a surplus, but that had all of those kind of magic asterisks those gimmicks of transferring resources, et cetera. It also didn't fully fund pensions, which, to be honest, a budget in this state hasn't done for at least 20 years. And so if you had accounted for it on a realistic basis, you'd be talking about a deficit of well over $4 billion. And again, if we don't do this now, it's just shifting the problems into the future, literally kicking the can down the road for our children and our grandchildren to pick up the tab. And so that's why I say, if we really, really want to be realistic about this, let's put in realistic costs for how much pensions cost. It's not, last year, I believe the in the governor's budget, it was $7.2 billion for pensions. The real number is over $11 billion if you went by the pensions actuaries.
Ken, have you ever heard a politician be realistic about this? And yes. Maybe I should rephrase this. In Illinois, have you heard a politician be realistic?
Well, I believe I've got a
You've
great
been
out
here.
For here.
A couple of years.
I've been here 6 months,
okay.
So I haven't heard one yet. Nobody wants to talk about it unless it's in the context of what, like Brian said, to blame the last administration. That has to stop. Somebody has to say the buck stops here. We're going to deal with this. We're going to be honest about this. And more so, as the listeners and the people of the state have got to demand that out of their politicians. We can no longer listen to a politician say, well, we only have a $1.5 billion problem. They should be asking the question, well, what about the pension system? Aren't you borrowing to pay for that?
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead, Brian.
People everywhere are what I think political scientists, I'm going to see if I can get this right, they call them what are they? It's like basically they talk a game about being fiscally conservative, but when it comes to the policies they want, they favor more liberal policies. So, don't tax me, tax the man behind that tree. Cut programs, cut waste out of government, but don't close the prison in my hometown. Don't cut my major at my higher education.
School,
yeah,
right.
Exactly. And, you can say we got to take seriously pensions. There have been people who have raised the alarm about pensions over the years. The real rub has been, do you deal with this on the side where you try to reduce benefits, which the legislature tried that a number of years ago. And full disclosure, I'm a member of the state university retirement system because my public radio station is part of the University of Illinois.
So am I.
I think, yeah. So, but
actually,
so
everybody at the table, just to be clear.
Take this with a grain of salt.
Full disclosure from all of us.
But, the legislature tried the benefit reduction cost, bending the cost curve of pensions by reducing benefits. The Illinois Supreme Court said no way. So you can try to change the Constitution and let this problem get worse for another 3 or 4 years while that works its way through the courts, because there's a question of, whether you can, these benefits are protected indefinitely into the future. Some people view it that way. There would definitely be a court fight. Meanwhile, Rome continues to burn. Or you can say we're going to approach this from the revenue side and, it's going to hurt. There's the Chicago Fed came out with a proposal to impose a statewide property tax, given mm-hmm. how politically unpopular that is.
Right.
It landed with a huge thud here in the Capitol. But other people have made other proposals. The governor himself has proposed, if this progressive or graduated income tax is approved by the voters, dedicating a small portion of that, about $200 million, as a dedicated revenue stream to overpay into the pension systems. But if, as we heard, we're already not paying enough, that still doesn't get us close. And the problem
right.
is the more we short it now, that is the less money and interest growing for the future. And we are counting on those returns to be able to make future payments on these benefits.
One of the things I want to stress is we can no longer cast things as an either or. So in the pension world, and I know this because I've actually been on the board of pension plans in different states, it's always cast as a defined benefit, so a traditional pension plan where you get a formula pension at the end of things versus a 401k type plan. But there's all kinds of interesting things that states did. I just did a big project with the Pew Charitable Trusts, and we looked at pension reform in a number of states. Pennsylvania went to what's called a hybrid model, where you have a smaller defined benefit, a smaller formula-based pension, and on top of it, you put a 401k, so you get the advantage of basically being able to manage your own money and have your own money if you do decide to leave your job early, and the possibility of, at retirement, still having a nice annuity guaranteed income. And so something like that, I think, should at least be discussed here. And I don't even hear it being discussed. It's still an either-or proposition.
And when we think about that, that's UIS Public Administration Professor Ken Chris. Brian Mackey's also with us. Brian, I wonder, this is not an election year. We have a Democratic governor. We have a supermajorities in both houses by the Democratic Party. Does that mean that we actually could see progress on some of these systemic problems that we have?
If I knew the answer to that, I'd be Warren Buffett or something. I don't know. I mean, it's an opportunity to do things, to get something done, right? We probably will not see the gridlock we saw over the previous 4 years with Governor Rauner. We may not even see the gridlock that we saw with past Democratic governors who didn't work as well with the legislature, like Governor Quinn and certainly Governor Blagojevich. You have Governor Pritzker won a much stronger mandate than Governor Quinn did. He's also just a very different sort of political animal.
Have we seen this, for example, with minimum wage and how that happened?
You know, we're in the honeymoon period, but that was something that a lot of Democrats have wanted to do for a long time, and it didn't happen, and now it did. And so that's something where he got an early win on the board.
And how does that help when it comes to something like this now?
Well, that's a separate conversation in terms of the budget. In fact, it hurts the state budget because...
I just mean in terms of working with Democrats.
In terms of working with Democrats. Well, I mean, there's a couple of ways to look at it, and we'll just have to wait and see what it is. On the one hand, it shows that he can get things done. He's got a lot of money behind his bully pulpit that he can use if he decides to go that way. On the other hand, a lot of people feel like this was kind of rammed through, certainly in the business community. Republicans feel that way, but there are a number of Democrats in Illinois who have been friendly to business interests in the past, or at least want to give them due consideration. And, you know, the fact that this kind of got pushed through, Democrats will object to that characterization, saying that they did negotiate it over the course of years. But, you know, this happened pretty quickly by Springfield standards. We usually don't see big legislation coming out this fast.
We just have a few minutes left here, so I want to end by asking both of you, what are you listening for in Governor Pritzker's budget address? What words are you hoping to hear from him? What tone are you hoping he strikes? Ken?
I think, as we said at the top of the hour, realism within the budget, some sense that these things are being addressed. I would also like to see a move toward fundamental tax reform, so broadening the base of the taxes, not dealing so much with the rates. I know the governor, at least in the campaign, focused a lot on the rate structure, but I think we could broaden the base of both the income and the sales tax in order to capture more revenue. You know, you might even be able to lower rates a little bit if you broaden the base enough. And it could be on things that wouldn't necessarily affect average people. So we don't tax very many business services. And that could be addressed also.
Brian?
Yeah, I guess I just want to hear, you know, will spending match revenue? That is the fundamental thing about government budgeting. You know, there's a great line that has been Joe Biden said, if you know, don't tell me what you believe, show me your budget and I'll tell you what you believe and what your values are. So I just want to see, you know, this is setting the framework for the next 4 years. I'm interested to see where he wants to go.
IPR's Brian Mackey, UIS's Ken Chris. Both of you, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Good to talk to you, Nyla.
That does it for us today for our 21st coverage. Our special coverage continues. We're produced by Libby Foster, Robin Lynn, and Alan Montesilio, who's our senior producer. Bobby McSwine is our intern. Technical direction and engineering comes from Kevin Coogan, Jason Croft, and Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Stay tuned. Just after this short break, we'll be back with special coverage of the governor's budget address.